From 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Joy Powers. Today on the show, we look at the raw water movement and why people have been drawn to this potentially dangerous trend.
I think for most people, it fits into a broader framework of what they view as the healthiest way for them to live. People are always looking for new frontiers, and people get excited about new frontiers.
Then we learn how the Urban Ecology Center plans to expand its Washington Park Center and its global reach.
Our astronomy contributor says it's a great time to look up.
We have an unusual situation where we can see four planets practically simultaneously in the night sky.
Plus, we'll hear about the Milwaukee Roast, Monday night's unofficial kickoff to the Milwaukee Comedy Festival.
And Bubbler Talk finds out more about the Brady Street Beasts. Lake Effect is next, but first, the news. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for joining us. I'm Joy Powers.
And I'm Bonnie North. You may have heard of the raw water or wild water trend. The movement has been growing over the past 5 years in the United States, worrying health professionals in the process.
Writer Matt Rohde wrote about the growing trend and some of its more colorful advocates for this month's Milwaukee Magazine. Matt, thanks so much for joining us here in studio.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
So what is wild water in this context?
It's water that you can go out into the wilds, into a forest or to a grassy area, and you find spring, and you take your bottle, often it's a glass bottle, and you hold it down to where the water comes out of. And if you're lucky, you're not the first person to go there, so there's might be a little PVC pipe sticking out of the ground, and that's a fine art and science unto itself and how to get those things positioned to channel the water out. And it's water that's bubbling up from the ground. It's a natural spring. And typically it's going to be pretty cool, and it might be really cold, depending on how far underground it's coming from. And most likely, even the colder ones will run year-round because of the pressure that's generated as they're rising up, and it prevents them from freezing.
So this is generally a source of water that feeds rivers or springs or lakes, something like that.
Right. A large portion of the rivers and lakes that we are aware of come from a large portion of their water comes from springs as well as rain. And so there's always this process of the water being turned over and the water sinking into the ground very slowly into aquifers, which are layers of sand and stone that are submerged in water. And then it comes back up again slowly. But the coming back up takes a bit longer. So you can have water sometimes that's anywhere from tens of years old to hundreds of years old, potentially. The last time it's been that long since it saw the daylight.
So what makes the water directly from the spring, what makes that different than the water that is in a river, that's in a lake further downstream?
It still exists, but there's a much lower chance of there being some kind of surface contamination from anywhere from pesticides to bacteria to different decomposing animals or whatever you can find. But there's a much lower chance of that kind of contamination. And so it tends to be much cleaner and more predictable because it's coming out of these underground channels, coming out of aquifers that are more or less set in their ways. And another big difference is they have a particular configuration of minerals and gases that are suspended in there that give it a certain flavor. And people buy bottled mineral water for much the same reason, like San Pellegrino or all these other brands. So if you want a fresh source of water, that's the safest one you're going to get, because going out with a bucket and scooping up from a lake or something is really not a good idea. But collecting from a spring that's well established, that other people have gone to, that is safe, and maybe a little bit of testing has been done on it. Doing a lot of testing, doing definitive testing is tough because it's expensive. And you can test one or two or a small handful of things for a reasonable amount of money, but if you want to do a whole wide panel and make sure you're not getting some weird pesticide from the farm 10 miles up the road that is somehow surface contaminating, that's usually in the order of thousands of dollars, is from what I understand.
Well, and that's a big question that surrounds this trend. So there has been, over the last 5 years, a growing number of people who are interested in raw water, in, you know, wild water. But there is a reason that health professionals advise against drinking this type of water. And what are those reasons? You spoke to someone who spoke to that.
Yeah, I spoke to a guy who's a little bit biased, who's in the bottled water industry and who had a long background in water safety and drinking water. But other people made the argument, too, there's always a chance for a surface contamination. And the guy that I spoke to who was really into this, and his opinion was that he could look at, and this is what we did when we went from site to site, was that he could look at a spring and see that there wasn't stuff falling down in it, and that it was coming straight from the ground, and then it looked clear. And he also did some testing of the amount of what are called total dissolved solids in the water, just to see in a rough way how much stuff is floating around in there. But there's always the risk of it's most likely clean as it's emerging from the deep ground, but as it gets up into the higher levels, there water is exchanged, there's stuff that's flowing around, and stuff is going down as the some water is coming up. So there is a risk of contamination. There aren't a lot of, at least the people I spoke to, there aren't a lot of or any known cases of people getting sick from it. But
oh, there are. There are a lot of instances of people getting sick from raw water. I should emphasize that. But it seems as though the people you spoke to had some tips. If you are inclined to seek out raw water, what you should do to limit your exposure to these kinds of deadly bacteria.
The best advice I came across was to stick to sources that are used heavily by and may or may not be maintained by some kind of government or entity. There's the Prior Avenue Well, which isn't really a spring, but it's about as close as you can get in Milwaukee, is overseen by the Ozaukee County Health Department. And there are a couple other. There's one in Dousman that is pretty rustic. It's like a big half barrel filled with water, and you go up and fill. And but people wait in lines to get to drink this water. And there's another one in the Big Bend area that's popular, been there for a long time, since the 19th century. And it's those areas are where you're the safest. I mean, if you're more of a wildcat who's crawling around out in the woods, then you can run into more surface contamination. The Big Bend and Dousman areas, it's a little more set up to sometimes elevate the water that's coming out or to prevent it from being contaminated by runoff, because you always have surface water.
Why have these people decided to eschew normal tap water? What do they believe is different about wild water and I guess inherently better than tap water?
They believe that some of the things that aren't contained in tap water, I mean, fluoride is always debated. Then chlorine is another issue. But they don't – more than that, what I heard was that people believe that there's an extra benefit to drinking water that's wild and raw and comes from the earth, that it's somehow more nourishing because it has more minerals and it has – this is somehow the human body is tuned to consume this kind of water. And some people take that to a pretty far extreme. Writer, a guy named David Wolf, who is a proselytizer in saying that this is the only kind of water you should drink. This is if you send water through pipes, it does horrible things to it, which is a little difficult to swallow. No pun intended.
much like unclean water. What's interesting about this whole kind of conversation is many believe that our ability to clean water has really and filter water has really allowed us to avoid some of these life-threatening diseases that people for hundreds of years have been dying from. I mean, there's a reason why people drank so much wine for so long, and ciders and these kind of fermented drinks, eschewing water at that time because it was so unclean. So what is this return to raw, unfiltered water? What did the people say was their inspiration for returning to that kind of lifestyle, I guess?
Yeah, I think for most people it fits into a broader framework of what they view as the healthiest way for them to live. And people are always looking for new frontiers, and people get excited about new frontiers. And organic vegetables like aren't that exciting anymore. Yeah, and it makes sense that at some point, culturally, a group of people who really are obsessed with getting close to earth, as close as they can, sources for food and water, they would start to look at drinking water. And the crisis in Flint maybe has had some kind of influence, or a general distrust of government that you can't leave them to handle your water. And Milwaukee, the water tastes pretty good. Other places in the country, like, it can be really hit or miss, so that could be a factor too.
Well, Matt, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect and speaking with me.
Oh, sure. Thanks for having me.
Matt Rohde is the author of the article Spring Fever. It's featured in this month's Milwaukee Magazine. You can hear more of our conversations with Milwaukee Magazine at WUWM.com.
Coming up next, we learn how the Urban Ecology Center plans to expand its Washington Park Center and its global reach. Lake Effect returns in a moment on Milwaukee's NPR.
Lake Effect continues now on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Joy Powers. Milwaukee's Urban Ecology Center, or UEC, has outposts along the Milwaukee and Menominee Rivers. Yesterday, the organization announced the Milwaukee County Board of Supervisors has granted preliminary approval of a plan to build out its Washington Park Center.
The park's boathouse has been the UEC's base for 11 years. By expanding its physical footprint, the UEC hopes to connect more neighborhood schools, children, and families to nature, and to build efforts to steward the park's green space.
The UEC also hopes to encourage other communities to follow its environmental engagement lead. This week, nearly 24 people from as near as Madison and as far as Israel are visiting to learn what makes it tick.
WUWM's environmental reporter Susan Bentz tagged along for part of the 4-day intensive to see what the neighborhood-based program looks like from the outside.
Imagine this experience. It's 9 a.m. at the Riverside branch of the Urban Ecology Center. Summer campers are rolling in, and volunteers are about to head out to their weekly contribution to root, restoring our outdoors together. Today, they're rooting out invasive plants in the savanna within the arboretum UEC helped bring to life. What better way to immerse someone into a program that has grown from 1 to 3 neighborhood-based ecologically steeped educational centers on Milwaukee's east, central, and south sides? Ken Leinbach welcomes the slightly bewildered guests to their 4-day experience.
I'm the executive director here, and we have folks here scattered from all over the world, actually, from Israel and from Colombia and from Mexico and from different cities in the United States who are learning about what we do here and how we do it. So share the directions, grab a chair and follow me, and we'll do the next activity.
Gabriela Vaca traveled from Guadalajara, Mexico to absorb the UEC story.
I'm working in the University of Guadalajara, working in a project of building a museum of environmental sciences.
Crews are constructing the museum right now.
It's a very nice project because it's about try to make people understand how the cities work and how they depend on the nature and the landscapes that surround our city.
UEC's education director, Beth Heller, guided Vaca and the other participants below the Urban Ecology Center toward the Milwaukee River and into Riverside Park. Trees tower above their heads.
I chose this spot because I wanted to be able to see most of you, but also be out in nature. We're also looking out over the Milwaukee River is right down over there. So we're just in a beautiful location in the park. So that's why I stopped here. And the next set of instructions are going to be very, very, very simple.
Heller instructs them to pull out paper and pencil.
And the exercise is actually very elegant in its simplicity. Very simple. Your assignment is to draw what you see.
It's part of the UEC staff training. Mm-hmm. Heller says they learn to communicate with one another and sort out differences when they come up. That lays the foundation for their jobs, connecting kids to nature, not a once-a-year field trip, but by having classes return over and over throughout the years. UEC focuses on schools within a 2-mile radius of the center. Instructors don't just guide kids into nature. They pick them up at school and return them in UEC vans. Scientist and entrepreneur Amit Lotan is taking copious notes. He's part of a group from Tiberias, an ancient city in Israel, next to the Sea of Galilee. Lotan says right now his group is at the discussion stage.
I own a biotech company, and I'm looking from outside a little bit on this whole workshop, but it's opened my eyes. It is clear to me that kidneys, nature, and if they were not growing up in a nature environment, they will not have the idea of how to keep it. But definitely I was not aware about, some kids don't have it, have no access to this.
All right, so welcome.
Kim Forbeck greets the group 5 miles west at the Washington Park branch.
We will be walking out through our ephemeral pond wetland area.
Forbeck, assisted by a small team and oodles of volunteers, works to turn landscapes at all three UEC branches choked with invasive plants to diverse native oases for insects and other wildlife.
There's a famous entomologist who talks about non-native species as sort of like putting out a big bowl of plastic fruit. So it's not very good as a food source or foraging for critters that are around. And then we're creating sort of that wonderful buffet as a way that you can talk about with kids. Let's walk over into the prairie area and we'll show you one of the areas where we engage people on the land.
Forbeck says there's no better teaching tool for kids than to watch natural systems at work. Participant Jeff Gover says native plants and wetland restoration are new to his professional vocabulary. Gover came with a group from McAllen, Texas, where they're building a center of urban ecology. Gover works for the city and is managing the building's construction.
Originally, I came here with construction in mind, but now I'm catching the more purpose of the building that we're doing, and I'm really glad to be a part of it and hoping to go back and influence some of my management that they need to kind of look at things a little bit more differently. A lot of it's been about numbers, and it also needs to include the purpose of what we're doing.
The international visitors had their own hands-on experience back at the Riverside branch. As dusk fell, UEC Research and Community Science Coordinator Jennifer Callahan prepared to lead them on an expedition.
You are joining us tonight kind of for three different surveys all rolled into one. You're joining us for what is one of our longest running citizen science, community science projects here at the Urban Ecology Center, our acoustic bat monitoring project. You will also be joining us for one of our newest projects that we have started here at the center, which is firefly monitoring.
Before Callahan had a chance to set out with her survey crew, news arrives that a visiting team of bat experts from the DNR had netted a bat.
Okay, so let's come up this way.
Callahan guides them into the park where the bat team is identifying, measuring, and tagging what turns out to be several bats before setting them free into the night sky.
So we're going to take the length of their forearm. So this is another big brown bat. This is another male.
How can you tell that it's a male?
Right there.
That's Gabriela Vaca's voice you heard, the visitor from Guadalajara. Midway through the 4-day experience, she reports being inspired.
Just the fact that it is possible to make something like this. I mean, they also have the challenges here, and they have accomplished to make it. And I think that's why I take back home, like, I mean, we're facing challenges and like all the stress and the work, but it is possible and it's worth it. When you see like these people, like, it's impressive. And I think the contact with nature is important for everyone.
For Lake Effect, I'm Susan Benz.
So, yeah.
Susan Bentz is WUWM's environmental reporter. You can hear more of her stories at WUWM.com.
It is all about alignment on our next Astronomy Chat, planetary alignment, that is. Stay tuned to learn more when Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee's NPR. We're back with more of Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Joy Powers. When we talk about things being in proper alignment, we're often talking about our spines or our priorities or perhaps our metaphysical place in the universe.
Contributor Jean Creighton is all for those kinds of calibrations, but the kind of alignment that she wants to talk about in this month's Astronomy Chat is planetary.
We have an unusual situation where we can see four planets practically simultaneously in the night sky. And Mars is having a particularly fun time because it's closer to the Earth than usual, which means that it's significantly brighter than it normally is.
And that's the reddish color, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
So let me give you a tour, Bonnie.
Yes, please.
So let's just pretend here that it's about 9:30 in the evening, and you want to look straight west. You will see something incredibly bright, and that will be Venus. So Venus is comparable to an airplane, I say. So if the airplane moves, it's an airplane, and if the airplane is still, then it's Venus. So that is going to set fairly quickly after sunset, and it's for the very keen people, you might be able to see Mercury. I even find Mercury to be challenging because it's so low in the sky. It's often in the twilight, hard in the city. And oh, by the way, all these planets are along what we call the ecliptic. So they're all in a line. That's why we said alignment, because they're basically all on the same plane. So the moon, the planets are going to be on one line, which helps because other than Venus, other planets and Jupiter look star-like in terms of their brightness. Jupiter is going to be visible in the southwest, and it's going to be very bright. You'll be able to see it before it's even completely dark yet. So that's something to get excited about. And then, if you are familiar with constellations, along Sagittarius, which is supposed to be a centaur, but actually looks like a teapot, in my opinion. At the very tip of the lid, you'll find Saturn. Saturn is noticeably dimmer than Jupiter. Then, at 9:30, you won't be able to see Mars yet. It won't be above the horizon. But if you wait for an hour, you'll be able to see, as you say, a slightly reddish object low in the sky in the southeast. And it will be at its highest, about 35 degrees above the horizon, at midnight. Now, people are excited about Mars right now because it's much closer than it normally is. It's going to be almost three times brighter than it normally is. So it's hard to quantify that without saying, oh, it compares to such and such a star. But I can tell you this to give you a reference point. Closer to the west than Sagittarius, assuming that you can see that little teapot along the horizon, even easier is to see Scorpius. So Scorpius, in my mind, looks like it has a bow shock and a little curvy body and a stinger. In the middle of the body, there's a reddish star called Antares because it's so similar to Mars. And it's along the ecliptic, so it's going to be easily mistakable with Mars. So that gives you how bright Mars normally is, but it's going to be brighter than Antares. So in one evening, you can see four planets. With a little skill and luck, you might be able to see Mercury. Five planets before it even gets very late. So you can kind of connect with our familiar planets in the solar system.
Does this happen the same way every year? Is this just a phase that we go through as part of our orbit where these things line up along the ecliptic?
So thank you for asking that, because a lot of people think that planetary position is seasonal, but it isn't. So different planets move at different rates. So it's a free-for-all every year. Now, what is true is that something like Jupiter, for example, because it's so far from the sun and its orbit is so large, it takes a long time to noticeably move, whereas Venus moves noticeably from night to night. From that point of view, it kind of reminds you the beauty of celestial mechanics, how we, you know, can predict with such accuracy where planets are going to be. In fact, that is what kind of made modern science wake up, because we wanted to figure out where our planet's going to be. And that's what made Kepler look at Mars and figure out how are the orbits organized. And then Newton said, you know what? I think I know why.
And I love the idea that this is not something that happens all the time. This is not something like, oh, I'll get it next year.
Sometimes people will say, well, but I don't have a clear, I can't see, say, the northeastern horizon or whatever. You might need to go to a park. You might need to just adjust your position so that you don't have a tree or a house in front of you. But it really is worth seeing Jupiter. As I said, if you look up, it's the first thing that kind of catches your eye. It's so bright.
And it's bright enough to get through the light pollution.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and all
this
of that.
Is definitely a city object, yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, and if you want a couple more, mm-hmm. I think this time of year, it's good to look for Arcturus. And I know that we've talked about this before, but it's good to refresh people's memories. We arc to Arcturus, and the arc is just the tail of the dipper, which is nice and high this time of year. And if you keep going arc to Arcturus, you spy Spica. It is possible if you get carried away to Arcturus and spy Jupiter, Jupiter's kind of close to Spica. So that'll be another way of knowing, yep, I got right planet, or nope, this is something else.
So if we start around sunset, around 9:30 as it gets dark, and go to about midnight,
you should be in
get
a
all
good
of
place,
them.
Everything. Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Anything else we should be looking at this time of year that's fun in the sky?
Oh, I think you should look for the summer triangle. We so deserve the summer that we get. We so need that beautiful weather, the sunlight and everything else. So you look in the east, you're going to see the summer triangle that straddles the Milky Way. The Milky Way is not going to be visible in the city, but as you get ready for your vacations, perhaps you can look for the Milky Way. One star, Vega, comes very high above our horizon. On the other side of the Milky Way, you'll get Altair. And smack in the middle, you'll get Deneb. So those three stars make out the summer triangle. And that's a pretty easy find even in the city. The Milky Way, you need to be a little farther, but the summer triangle in the city actually in some ways is easier because there's less to choose from.
Right. You can see it, and yeah, the Milky Way kind of has faded. Right. Well, Jean, as always, it's so much pleasure to talk with you. I think I have to go out and maybe take a glass of wine and go look at the night sky.
I hope you do.
I think so. Thanks so much, and we'll talk next month.
Thank you.
Jean Creighton is the director of the Manfred Olson Planetarium at UW-Milwaukee and our regular astronomy contributor. You can listen to all of our conversations with her at wuwm.com.
The 13th annual Milwaukee Comedy Festival takes place next week. We will have a preview of its Monday night kickoff event when Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee's NPR.
Back with more of Lake Effect on Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Joy Powers.
And I'm Bonnie North. Summer is festival season in the Cream City, and its funniest fest is just around the corner, the Milwaukee Comedy Festival. The festival is celebrating 13 years, and its four-year-old unofficial pre-kickoff event has become a tradition of its own. The Milwaukee Roast aims to get us all laughing at ourselves.
You know, we're the 10th drunkest city in the nation. How amazing is that? I mean, that's something to be proud of. We have many things to be embarrassed about, but that is something. In Milwaukee, drunk is a destination. Not just drinking, but drunk. Strangers will help you to drink here. A friend of mine, Eric, and I went to the baseball game one day, and we're like, we skipped out of school. Well, it wasn't school, it was work, whatever. It was a beautiful day. We scalped tickets. I got loge, front row in the box. We're happy. We're skipping down the aisle. We've got drinks in both hands, and the usher stops us. This is the family section. You can't drink here. Our face was frozen. Our hearts were melting. We didn't know what to do. Terror. We were going to watch the Brewers without alcohol? No. And a hush fell over the right-hand crowd. And they immediately sprang into action. They said, we have two seats. You can sit here. Help them. And the usher was very concerned as well. We have to make sure they can drink and have fun. Within minutes, we had new seats, we had new friends, and we were on our way to getting hammered drunk. Milwaukee might be an embarrassment, but they will never let you down to have a good time. Yes!
That's longtime Milwaukee resident and comedian Rita Landis performing at last year's Roast.
Since its debut in 2015, the idea of getting Milwaukee comedians and media professionals together to make fun of our beloved city ahead of the festival has been a hit.
The Milwaukee Roast returns to Club Garibaldi on Monday evening. Tyler Moss and Milwaukee Comedy Festival founder Matt Kemple recently joined WUWM's Rachel Owens to share more of the spirit around the event and how it ties in with the comedy festival.
Well, gentlemen, great to have you here. Welcome to Lake Effect.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks a lot.
So, okay, let's start with the idea of a roast. What is the idea of a comedy roast?
I guess the idea is making fun of something that you care about, or sometimes it's something you care about. But in our case, we like Milwaukee, so what's a better way of supporting the city you love by making fun of it?
It's like when you make fun of like your brother or your sister or another loved one. It's mostly rooted out of a place of appreciation and love, and you know kind of the idiosyncrasies, the inner workings of like what you're making fun of. And you also want it to be better. I mean, like essentially you just want to make fun of something while also recognizing that it's flawed and not perfect. And in our sense, as like website and like a local publication, we want to address a few of the issues, you know, the racial divide, the points of local arguments, I guess. Like, I'm sure there'll be a lot of jokes about the streetcar this year. And the Milwaukee flag has always been something that's been referenced. And the other comics themselves, the different neighborhoods, there's a lot of Bayview is this way, River West is this way, back and forth. And it gets everyone laughing, and it will also leave everyone in a better place because we will be raising money for the Milwaukee Women's Center.
So why kick off the Milwaukee Comedy Festival with a roast?
I think it's the best way to get things started because, you know, we can all kind of come together in a place and all decide together, hey, this is all for fun. Mm-hmm. It's all okay. There's going to be a bunch of mean things being said, but it's all for the sake of funny. And that's really what the whole week of the comedy festival is about, is bringing people together to laugh. Hey, you know, we're living in crazy times. Let's all get together and share joy in the best way possible.
The origin was back in, I guess, 2015, we meaning Milwaukee Record, we approached Matt about if we wanted to maybe do some shows ahead of the actual festival to kind of get the interest up and the awareness. And this was a very simple idea where everyone knows what a roast is, and it's inviting, it's accessible. It's not like these are my 15 minutes about online dating, or this is what it's like being a man or a woman or like whatever. It's just like you're going to hear jokes about the Milwaukee Lion. That was the big thing that year. And, Sheriff Clark and Mayor Barrett. And like as you said, Matt, it's a very fun gateway into the festival.
And it seems appropriate too, Tyler, because you've been a big advocate for the Milwaukee comedy scene. You've been giving it attention in a way that other publications and other outlets around Milwaukee have not so much.
We're great. Milwaukee Record. Milwaukee Record. Like when we launched in early 2014, that was a major point that I wanted to address. Like I had been writing at other places, and you get to write a little bit here and there, but you'd have to kind of like advocate and fight for any kind of attention for local people, because local is oftentimes viewed as less than local music, local dining, local filmmakers and everything. And that also goes into local stand-up, local improv. A lot of real value there, though. And I wanted to address that. And I feel like this long-running, amazing festival is a... that's the way... I mean, this is like their kind of, you know, Super Bowl. Like, they're doing awesome things at the UC and at Lakefront Brewery and all these other, like, local venues that Matt is, like, you know, hosting shows at. And I wanted to be a part of that, because as I'm watching the Milwaukee scene grow, like, the Milwaukee stand-up scene, Milwaukee, like, you know, humor of any sort, I thought it made a lot of sense that we align ourselves with the amazing things happening and what is being built and improving every year in Milwaukee.
I appreciate that. Thanks. That, and it is exciting, because I have always thought we were doing incredibly fun and exciting things. And then you just mentioned industries that people would consider, you know, not as good being in Milwaukee. But to me, I'm like, oh, those are all the things that make it great. The local food scene, the local music scene, and then, you know, to have the comedy scene be included in, you know, the awesome culture that is Milwaukee, you know, that to us is very exciting, to finally have people be like, oh, comedy is a worthwhile option to go out and see in Milwaukee, and mm-hmm. local music is really good, and, you know, local restaurants have great food and all of these other things.
There is this local hunger and awareness and, like, desire to laugh, I think. Like, around here, we don't really take ourselves all that seriously. We can laugh at ourselves. And we also, like, for roughly half the year, we're inside. We're kind of, you know, pent up, and we want to get out, and we want a reason to, you know, have some drinks and maybe celebrate. And so, like, we're lucky to have the venues like the Paps and the Riverside, and even, like, the arena, like, right out the gate, they're going to be having a, actually, I think, Jim Gaffigan and who else there? Kevin Hart, I think. The recognition that, like, wait, there's all these other things that are happening right under your nose, like whether it's at a bar or just an open mic night on a, like, weekend, or some random showcase at a local brewery, or a place at the basement of the Grand Avenue Mall. There's a lot of awesome things happening all around the city, and you just have to look for it, or you have to be exposed to it. And that's, like, I guess where our role is. We want to expose, you know, locals who may want to attend some of these events. We want to let them know this exists, and it's usually very affordable and always a lot of fun.
By the way, congratulations, because we haven't mentioned it yet, but it's the 13th Milwaukee.
13.
Yeah. And I always
Lucky
like the
13.
Story. Yeah, I always like the story that you have, too, that you in jest called it the first annual Milwaukee Comedy Festival, not
yeah.
expecting it to last this long.
I didn't even know I would be alive this long. I really thought comedy would have killed me off years ago. But it is nice to see an idea, because it came out of a need to tell more people about comedy. It really was this sort of underground comedy scene happening, and there was some really exciting, funny, fun stuff, but nobody knew about it. So, hey, let's just get everybody together and just try to tell as many people as we can to come out and laugh with us. And I really did not think it would be successful. So we kept doing it, and it's become more and more successful every year. And it's very rewarding to look back and see that, you know, we've been able to laugh so much.
And this is a question for either of you, but how would you feel that the comedy festival is bringing together both the national and the local scene? It feels like it's kind of a two-way street, where you want to get people in from around the country, but you also want to put Milwaukee on the map as this place for comedy, a destination and a hub for comedy. So how do you see those two interchanging?
I think they're extremely close-knit, because we have this incredible talent pool here in town, and they can only go so far here in town. So what if we could give them even bigger opportunities? What if we could give a local comic an opportunity to open up for a big name like Colin Quinn? So for us, that is an extremely important theme throughout the festival. We try to have somebody that's from the state of Wisconsin or local on every single one of the shows that we're presenting. And so for a lot of these comics, they haven't had an opportunity to work with other comics that are from LA or from New York or, you know, from any other place. And there's different styles of comedy in those cities. So to bring all that together and for local performers to be able to work with those kinds of comedians, they're going to get better themselves. And the local comedy scene is going to get bigger and better and stronger. And again, to have somebody in Milwaukee have the opportunity to do a 20, 30, 40 minute headliner set, great. But to have them be able to open for a show at Turner Hall, like last year when we had Michael Ian Black, we were able to give a couple of comics an opportunity. People like John Egan was able to feature for that show, and he came to us, and he, the first time he was in the festival, he hosted a show. And then the next year, you know, he was getting better and better, and he got to feature. And then he got to, you know, headline a show and open for somebody famous like that, you know. And again, that's something for us to be able to give that opportunity to other comics. It's like, hey, we noticed that you've been working really hard, you know, not just in the last month or the last week, but for years. And this is a way for you to not just continue your career, but to get actual credits for opening for somebody that has that much pull in the comedy scene. You know, that's very exciting for the comics, and I think very beneficial to them as funny people.
It seems like the headliners too are having a great time. For example, last year with Michael Ian Black, it felt like he was really, he had a long improv'd bit, or it felt improv'd, and he was really having fun with the audience on that one, for example. So it seems like the headliners and the bigger names are really getting into it as well.
And that is something that you don't see that side of comedy producing. But for us, we really try to work with wonderful people. You know, there's comics out there that are really funny, but they're not necessarily personable to work with or this or that. And it has a tendency, we seem to attract the kind of audience member that has a certain positive attitude towards things, and the kinds of comics we work with seem to have a similar attitude. So it's exciting to be able to work with great people that are also willing to work with local comics and, you know, are approachable. And, you know, it's exciting year after year to have events where the comics are coming from backstage and taking time to meet people and things like that. Like the Lady Parts Justice League show we'll be doing on Thursday of the festival week with the co-founder of The Daily Show and all these amazing women comics that are from Netflix and HBO and The Daily Show and all these other places. They'll be doing a meet and greet after the show and things like that. And it's just so cool to be able to see, you know, quote, famous people, you know, willing to talk with just their fans and be able to meet with them.
Tyler, have you seen how the comedy festival has changed Milwaukee from the inside out?
I think in a way, I mean, as an audience member, you're kind of hit with these, you know, different either formats or different people that you wouldn't investigate on your own. And you're kind of, I don't want to say you're forced to, but you're like the captive audience. If you want to see the thing, or if you go in paying or like attending, like with the idea of watching one person or one sort of discipline, you're going to be getting exposure to new people and new things, and you'll probably be very happy with what you saw.
And you spoke as well, Tyler, about how there seems to be a nationwide boom for people finding their own niche. It seems to be, you know, a good time for comedians as well. And it also seems like perhaps for Milwaukee, a great time to capitalize on that, because we are kind of a small town city. So do you feel like that's especially well suited for the city of Milwaukee right now?
I think just as a whole, there's more media and more things. There are more access points than ever before. So having these new vehicles to get your name out there and to get what you've been working on out in front of other people, like whether it's a show like this or your own podcast or by doing videos. I mean, the people in the roast, they're from all different formats. You know, we have a noted author in the world of sci-fi that will be involved, Patrick Tomlinson. There's a guy who's goes around the world doing rap battles in Australia, but he's also a person who's involved in stand-up. There's a radio host who does sports-related, things every day, and he's also, you know, an aspiring and accomplished local stand-up who will, he might be bringing in the drive time people who they listen to his Milwaukee Bucks-related takes every day, or the Brewers or whatever, and they get to hear him talk about his, you know, parents and his upbringing and like dating and things like that. And so it's just this.
Did also get Leroy Butler to come to a show at the Underground Collective one time, which was pretty
cool. We're talking about Rami Maclach, of course. And then Matt Kemple, a person with no comedy background.
Zero.
He's probably not even talented.
He
but
has
we're giving
zero
him a chance,
talent.
You know? So everyone has a different voice. Everyone has a new like perspective. It's all different ages, and it runs the gamut of the variety that makes the city as a whole and the scene, like the whole comedy scene, really special. And so I know that's what I attempted to get with my roast, which is just the opening night, the unofficial official show. But that's leading into the fest, where I know for Matt and the other people that make this like amazing festival happen. I know that's really important to him too, to have a bunch of different voices, a bunch of different representations and like perspectives. And so everyone can leave laughing.
So I'm curious, Matt, for this year, is there anything that struck you about the people who sent their submissions in to be performers this year as opposed to other years?
There was a very clear level of talent this year that we had never really seen before. And I think that the lineup of the festival expresses that. There's someone with a television credit on pretty much every single show we have in the lineup this year. And that's not necessarily an easy thing to do. It's a volunteer festival. So for us to be able to bring in consistently incredible talent from New York and LA and all these other cities in between is a real treat. And just a couple years ago, not very long ago, we were ecstatic to have a submission from New York or one submission from LA. And this year there must have been 30 or 40 from each of those cities, plus 100 others from other cities all over the country. So for me, that was something that was very apparent right away this year, was this is the kind of quality that we're looking for on a regular basis. So to just have that overwhelming amount of talent and originality too, you're not just seeing the same jokes, you know, in the political climate that we're in, it's likely to see a lot of similar concepts. But that wasn't necessarily the case with this year's submissions. We saw a very wide range of not just talent, but type of jokes, diversity, men, women, transgender. It was really exciting to feel like what kind of festival we were putting together was truly something that encompassed as much talent from as many far-reaching places as we could.
Well, Tyler Moss and Matt Kemple, it's been really fun talking with you today. So thanks for coming in, and congratulations on the 4th annual roast and the 13th annual comedy festival.
Thanks.
Tyler Moss of the Milwaukee Record and the Milwaukee Comedy Festival's Matt Kemple spoke with WUWM's Rachel Owens about the festival's unofficial pre-kickoff event, the Milwaukee Roast.
The event will be held Monday evening at 8 at Club Garibaldi. The Milwaukee Comedy Festival runs from August 1st through the 5th, and you can find a full schedule of events at WUWM.com.
We'll take one last break, and then Bubbler Talk finds out more about the Brady Street Beasts. Lake Effect returns in a moment on Milwaukee's NPR. More of Lake Effect on Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Joy Powers.
Bubbler Talk, quenching Milwaukee's thirst for knowledge.
I'm Marty Michelson. For this week's Bubbler Talk, we decided to tackle a request from Kathy Yanoff of Shorewood.
Could you please do an update on the Brady Street Beasts?
The Beasts Kathy is referring to is actually a sculpture featuring three fanciful creatures on Milwaukee's east side called Cavorting Critters. It's tucked away near the corner of Brady and Holton, north of downtown. You can get the best view while walking or driving over the Holton Street Bridge. There are three critters, a water rat, a dragonfly, and a deer, created from sheet metal and painted in bright colors. They were installed in 2000, and it gives the impression that they've climbed up the side of the old Brady Street lift station building. Kathy says the sculpture is her favorite piece of whimsical art, but she's concerned about its future. I met her at the sculpture and we gazed up at the critters.
Yeah, I've noticed over the years that the beasts are getting more and more faded. and it makes me worry that they're going to disappear altogether and they're going to be taken down and we won't see them again. So I'm really hoping that they get repainted.
The critters were the brainchild of Jalili Kohler, a philanthropist who helped oversee the revitalization of Brady Street about 20 years ago. She's also an artist and a fan of Art in Public Places projects. She says she wanted something fun and eye-catching for the spot.
It's whimsy, it's wonderful, it's a marker, it's memorable, and it excites your imagination.
So Kohler decided to give her friend Bill Reed a call. Reed lives in Racine and had been making a name for himself designing sculptures made of sheet metal. He specializes in animal figures and says when Jalili called, he got right to work thinking of a theme.
And tying with the beautiful lake here and the river that's making things nicer for the water and the animals that live on the water.
So. Eventually, Reed brainstormed the critters concept. He built the rat, the dragonfly, and the deer at his home in Racine and brought them up to Brady Street in his pickup truck. A crew helped hoist them onto the lift station building. Reed acknowledges the critters are faded by the sun and have been battered by the elements in the 18 years since they were installed. So he says he wants to take them down, restore them, and put them back onto the building.
I don't see any holes in them, but I want to make sure they're structurally good. And then, yeah, brush them down and give them a lot of primer and a lot of paint and some clear coating so they'll last even longer until the next thing.
I think the outdoor paints are better now than they were. And we're going to be able to take advantage of that. Yeah.
Jalili Kohler says she'll apply for a grant to help pay for the restoration of the water rat, dragonfly, and deer. If granted, the critters could be renovated within the year. Kohler also says she's such a fan of Reed's work that she wants him to craft something for the east end of Brady Street.
Support for this season's Bubbler Talk comes from Educators Credit Union, a member-owned credit union dedicated to helping those who live and work in Wisconsin make informed financial decisions. More at ecu.com. What's got you scratching your head about the Milwaukee area? Submit your question at wuwm.com/bubblertalk.
And Bubbler Talk wraps up the Friday edition of Lake Effect. I'm Joy Powers.
And I'm Bonnie North. Joy and I produce the show, along with Mitch Tyke and Audrey Nowakowski, along with assistant producer Maddie Andre. We get additional support from our fantastic interns, Ben Benversi, Lauren Keane, Gabby Powell, and Robin DiJacinto.
Additional reporting comes from Susan Benz and Taryn Powell. Michelle Matanowski is managing editor, and Jason Reavy is our studio engineer. Willie Porter wrote our theme music.
Thanks so much for tuning in today. Be with us tomorrow and Sunday at 3 for Lake Effect Weekend. It's right here on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.
Stay tuned. It's 11 o'clock, and Fresh Air is next.